This is the More Than Right podcast, an independent view of politics and American culture. I'm your host, Steve Lopez. In early November, just before the 2022 midterm elections, high-paid attorneys rummaged through a closet at President Joe Biden's office at the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement. That's when they discovered files from Biden's days as vice president. Those files were marked classified. A day later, the same attorneys found a stash of classified documents stored in the garage at Biden's Delaware home, on a shelf sitting behind Biden's classic 1967 Chevrolet Corvette. Oh, and later, they found another classified document squirreled away in Biden's home library. The odd thing is Biden's attorneys didn't inform their client of the document discoveries. Instead, the ambulance chasers reported their client's alleged violations of the Presidential Records Act and the Espionage Act of 1917 directly to the U.S. Department of Justice. We still don't know the identities of Biden's double-crossing consigliere, their law firm, or their hourly rate. What we do know is that Mr. Biden's stated plans to run for a second term as president aren't looking all that rosy at the moment. While the media offers Americans tortured explanations of how Biden's alleged violations of U.S. security laws are very, very different from President Donald Trump's alleged violations of security laws, they aren't asking why, after 7 long years, Biden's own lawyers turned against him. Is the law firm for whom Biden's lawyers work tied to the Democratic Party, like Perkins Coie? You may recall that Perkins Coie is the Washington law firm that hired British spy Christopher Steele to manufacture the infamous anti-Trump dossier, the manufactured document used by the FBI to secure warrants against Trump and members of his 2016 presidential campaign from the Secret Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, a Washington law firm that served as fixers for the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton presidential campaign. Perkins Coie was instrumental in launching the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. The intelligence community and the press picked up the ball and ran with it for 4 years. Some Democrats openly speculate that Republicans are behind this Biden classified document scandal. They say shadowy GOP henchmen planted the secret documents in the closet of the Chinese-funded think tank that bears Biden's name. Also, that they did the same at Biden's home and garage. That theory is, on its face, ridiculous. Republicans aren't that clever. Rather, it's more likely Biden's lawyers are tied in some way to the Democratic National Committee and are performing a function for which they are famous, manufacturing a scandal to ruin the reputation of a sitting president to make room for another yet to be named. The Hunter Biden laptop revelations provide investigative committees of the new Republican House majority a roadmap from which to follow highways made of cash, money that flowed from foreign governments like China, who sought influence with the Obama White House, the same China that gave $54 million in 2017 for the creation of the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement. Documents that triggered the appointment of a special counsel by the clearly aggrieved U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland. At this point, it seems the only way to save Biden from federal prosecution will be to dismiss the charges against Trump, a humiliating conclusion to an 8-year deep state campaign to destroy him and his MAGA movement. No one outside government knows the contents of Biden's secret documents. However, the media has been more than willing to speculate on the contents of the secret documents pertaining to Trump. The Washington Post quoted an unnamed FBI source, who else, as saying Trump's secret files were related to, quote, nuclear weapons, unquote. As a result of this FBI disinformation campaign, Presidential historian and MSNBC contributor Michael Beschloss tweeted, quote, Rosenbergs were convicted for giving U.S. nuclear secrets to Moscow and were executed June 1953, unquote. General Michael Hayden, former director of the National Security Agency, retweeted Beschloss' post, adding, quote, That sounds about right, unquote. But after the midterm elections, the Post reported, quote, FBI interviews with witnesses so far, they said, also do not point to any nefarious effort by Trump to leverage or sell or use the government secrets. Instead, the former president seemed motivated by a more basic desire not to give up what he believed was his property, these people said, unquote. Biden's former boss, President Barack Obama, for instance, possesses classified documents from his days as the nation's chief executive. They sit in the old Plunkett home furnishing store in the Chicago suburb of Hoffman Estates, awaiting the construction of Obama's presidential library. A letter from the Obama Foundation to the National Archives reads in part, quote, The Obama Foundation agrees to transfer up to $3,300,000 to the National Archives Trust Fund to support the move of classified and unclassified Obama presidential records and artifacts from Hoffman Estates to NARA-controlled facilities that conform to the agency's archival storage standards for such records and artifacts, unquote. How much more secure are classified documents stored at Trump's exclusive Mar-a-Lago estate than a shuttered furniture store in a western suburb of seedy, crime-plagued Chicago? Getting back to Biden, the Washington Free Beacon reports that Penn State, whose name sits along Biden's on that suspicious Washington think tank, like the Biden family themselves, has financially benefited from its association with a certain foreign philanthropist. Quote, foreign donations to the University of Pennsylvania more than tripled in the 2 years after the think tank opened, with most of the $61 million coming from China, unquote. Tucker Carlson of Fox News wondered if emails recovered from Hunter Biden's laptop might provide more insight.
So all of this aroused our suspicions, naturally, so we decided to take a closer look at the University of Pennsylvania and its ties to China. We took a look at text messages from Hunter Biden's laptop to see if we could find an answer. And we found messages between a senior professor at Penn's International Relations Department to Naomi Biden, that would be Hunter Biden's very young daughter. The message from the professor begins this way, quote, Dear Naomi, I'm writing you tonight to invite you to take part in a major conference in China at the end of March. I've been asked to help recruit a prominent young leader. They, the Chinese government, will fly you business class and, of course, provide all of your accommodations. I don't think it would surprise you that they are interested in you thanks to your family name. I would not take offense at that. It is truly the Chinese way, end quote. Pretty remarkable. As far as we know, that has not been previously reported. So here you have an employee of the University of Pennsylvania, an Ivy League school, sending an invitation, apparently on behalf of the Chinese Communist Party, to recruit Joe Biden's granddaughter for an influence operation, saying that she'd be flown to Beijing and stay in Chinese government-controlled accommodations. So a lot of people on television seem very concerned about national security at the moment. All these former CIA and NSA and FBI employees are going on CNN and MSNBC to tell you national security implications are first in mind. Are they concerned about this? Will they ask a single question about it? Of course they won't.
The media has yet to explain why classified documents stored in a closed Chicago furniture store and a closet at a Chinese-funded think tank bearing Biden's name were of little interest to federal investigators until recently. But here are several takeaways from all of this. One, Democrats and deep state agencies see President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris as damaged goods and have engineered this clumsy scandal to follow the exact fact pattern as their manufactured classified documents operation against President Donald Trump, without the heavily armed FBI raid, of course. Two, the loss of Twitter as an FBI tool for pro-Biden disinformation forced the Justice Department to get out in front of coming GOP congressional hearings on Joe and Hunter Biden. This forced the appointment of a special counsel, one whose investigation is limited in scope. By contrast, Trump's special counsel is going down the rabbit hole of his alleged connection to the fraternity prank known as the January 6th insurrection, for which no one has been legally charged with the actual crime of insurrection. 3. Hillary Clinton is counting her lucky stars that corrupt former FBI Director James Comey exonerated her in 2016 of all wrongdoing in the mishandling and destruction of 30,000 possibly incriminating classified State Department emails, emails illegally stored on Hillary and her staff's digital devices, devices the FBI later confirmed her staff destroyed, with hammers. 4. And most importantly, it is undeniable at this point in American history that counterintelligence operations against perceived domestic political enemies is the weapon of choice for the nation's true ruling elites, the unelected, bureaucratic, and permanent administrative state, of which the intelligence services are its secret army of enforcers. The Trump-Biden classified document scandals appear to be a deep state attempt to exclude the current 2024 front runners for their party's presidential nominations. Trump for being the outsider and America First populist who threatens Washington's bipartisan status quo, and Biden for he and Kamala Harris's unpopularity for mishandling, well, everything. And so, we Americans go on pretending that we live in a democratic republic, one whose government receives its just powers by consent of the governed. Anarchist author Larkin Rose once said, quote, "I'm not scared of the Maos and the Stalins and the Hitlers. I'm scared of the thousands of millions of people that hallucinate them to be authority and so do their bidding and pay for their empires and carry out their orders. I don't care if there's one loony with a stupid mustache. He's not a threat if the people do not believe in authority," unquote. So here's the question for all of us. Why do we believe in the authority of the deep state? And more importantly, why do we obey? Recent revelations that President Biden squirreled away classified documents at his Washington think tank and Delaware home, behind his classic 67 Corvette, has brought unwanted attention to the Biden homestead. In particular, the revelation that Hunter Biden of laptop fame rented the property in question from dear old dad, aka the big guy, for a tidy $50,000 a month over a period of 10 months. And Miranda Devine, the reporter who broke the Hunter Biden laptop story for the New York Post, says the big guy, President Joe Biden, failed to mention this financial boon on his tax return for the period in question. This has some Republicans slated for House committee chairmanships chomping at the bit to investigate. Back when GOP House members were still in the minority, whistleblowers alerted them to suspicious activity reports called SARs, from banks who did business with Hunter Biden. They involve suspicious financial transactions exceeding $10,000 a day. Oh, and these reports are in the possession of the U.S. Department of the Treasury. When minority Republicans on the House Oversight and Reform Committee requested hundreds of Hunter's SARs, the Treasury refused to hand them over, claiming the committee's ranking majority Democratic members were entitled to the information. Well, since Republicans took control of the House on January 7th, that excuse no longer holds. Will reports show Paymaster Hunter's exorbitant $50,000 a month rent to Dad was a not-so-subtle means to funnel the old man his cut of the Biden crime family's overseas profits? Profits Hunter made by trading access to then-Vice President Joe Biden? Such obvious and logical conclusions the self-appointed guardians of truth, the mainstream media, call conspiracy theories, a pejorative description ascribed to truths yet to be revealed. You remember Mac Isaac, don't you? He's the Wilmington, Delaware computer repairman tasked with fixing an unresponsive Macintosh laptop, one owned by a disheveled and barely coherent Hunter Biden. When Hunter abandoned the laptop without payment, Isaac took possession and copied the hard drive's explosive contents, sending them to Trump attorney and former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani. His Honor then sent the explosive info to New York Post reporter Miranda Devine, and the rest is yet to be written history. Last month, Molly Olmsted at the online journal Slate described Isaac as a, quote, somewhat confused and conspiracy-minded Trump supporter who eventually realized the scandalous and potentially criminal nature of the materials on the laptop, unquote. In one short paragraph, Olmsted calls the man with the goods on a multi-million dollar international influence peddling scheme with national security implications a conspiracy theorist and something of an investigative sleuth in the mold of Sherlock Holmes. Like master ventriloquists, the media are experts at talking out of both sides of their mouths. The moral to the story is this. When the government and their partners in the mainstream media say someone is engaged in conspiracy theories, listen to the conspiracy theorists. They're a lot better at connecting the dots than the dishonest scribblers of the press. House Democrats held a very public spectacle before relinquishing power to the new House majority. They gathered on the steps outside the House chamber to hold a commemorative moment of silence for the weepy eyes of the mainstream media. You see, it marked the second anniversary when men like Jacob Chansley, the bare-chested Arizonan carrying a bullhorn and wearing an animal skin cap with buffalo horns, meandered around the halls of the nation's capital on January 6, 2021. All that meandering, which the law defines as misdemeanor trespass, Democrats see as worse than the Civil War and the mass murder of Americans on 9/11 combined. That's because seeing a bare-chested man in a bearskin cap with buffalo horns sent Congress members and Vice President Mike Pence running for the relative safety of hall closets or inspired them to roll into fetal positions under their desks. January 6 proved the embarrassing moment when ordinary members of the public outdid their elected representatives in employing disjointed, repetitious, and meaningless dialogue and engaging in purposeless and confusing situations. At least that's how the American Heritage Dictionary defines plot elements that mark the theater of the absurd. January 6, 2021, you see, was a display of absurdity superior to that which was playing out on the national stage that day, the certification of the 2020 presidential election so-called winner, the big guy, Joe Biden, father of Hunter. But the absurdity of that day came with tragic consequences. That day, a lieutenant of the Capitol Hill Police, Michael Byrd, shot and killed the unarmed U.S. Air Force veteran of 14 years, Ashley Babbitt. Those congressional Democrats, assembled in reverent silence, heads bowed, made no mention of Ashley Babbitt. President Biden, whose elevation to the presidency Babbitt protested, falsely claimed on the second anniversary of her cold-blooded murder that five members of the Capitol Hill Police died at the hands of the January 6 pranksters. Five officers did die. The day after the so-called riot, Capitol Hill officer Brian Sicknick died of a stroke resulting from a blood clot. In the weeks that followed, four others died by suicide. None were shot in the throat like the unarmed Ashley Babbitt, the only one whose untimely death Americans should commemorate every January 6th. That was certainly the case for Babbitt's mother, Mickey Whithoft, while protesting outside the infamous Washington, D.C. jail where J6 protesters, accused of misdemeanor trespass, languish, the same Capitol Hill police that killed her daughter 2 years ago also arrested Witthoft on the charge of jaywalking. You see, it wouldn't do to have a true victim of January 6th, the one whose daughter died violently that day, steal attention from Nancy Pelosi's mock remembrance of what at best can be described as a fraternity prank. Rather, we should commemorate the day a stolen election was wrongfully certified and an innocent protester was murdered by Congress's Praetorian Guard. These are the two government evils Americans should consider every January 6th. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. Should you wish to leave a comment, you can reach us at morethanrightpodcast@gmail.com. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please give it a 5-star review on Apple iTunes. It will help promote the podcast and be much appreciated. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.